introduce all of our panelists. They will talk for a little bit. We have a significant amount of time set aside at the end for your questions. We also have some questions for you guys, so this will be a totally interactive sort of experience. And what's going around right now is just a bunch of handouts that you are welcome to adapt if you're a teacher. If you not yet a teacher, if you want to do it later, you're welcome to steal away as it were. So first we will have Jane Wanderer, who is a second year in the English PhD program working on gender-based performance in early modern culture. She teaches a course in literature and analytical thinking, for which she holds something called Young Talk Fridays. Those who want to hear more about that, find out. And then we will have Sarah Kirsch, who is in her fourth year of the English PhD program and is doing a dissertation on politics, sexuality, and sonnets in 19th century England. She likes to teach courses organized around the theme of identity and ideology, and will be talking today about writing portfolios and personal reflection assignments. And then after Sarah will be John Burrell. John is a fifth year graduate student in the English department and consultant at the Writing Studio. His interests include John Ford films, science fiction, behaviorism, political ecology, and pedagogy. And we'll hear a little bit about the intersection of some of those. And then I'll just a little bit at the end, and then we'll have questions. So we'll start with you.
Okay. All right, so an important question, at least for me, in incorporating personal writing into my classroom is why? Why is it so important to get the personal on the table, so to speak, and what work do we imagine it's doing once it's there? So I come to personal writing sort of by way of feminist theory and women's studies, and I think that has conditioned the way it comes into my teaching. Feminist theory stresses a decentered classroom where the authority is sort of diffused in a way that gives students a voice, like just in circles. So obviously it seems that valuing personal experience in classroom discussion and writing is part of that, but I think that it also can do more. This, for me, an important part of the answer to the question of what personal writing is doing is the reality that students are not decontextualized beings. So my class is thematically arranged around issues of identity formation, especially in terms of race and class and gender. And as women's studies professor Susan Heal has observed, students most often come willing to discuss other people's race, class, and sexuality, but not their own. So it's important for me to get students to confront that they have positions in terms of those categories that might influence how they view other people's positions in relation to those categories. So I try to get my students to talk about the social nature of subjectivity and get them to look at how identity is contingent on larger social and ideological issues. And I think that encouraging students to confront and engage their own positions in relation to these issues seems to be enriching the depth of overall class discussion. So once you start to look at it particular to them, it seems to give them new tools for talking about in relation to other kinds of literature that we do. And suggesting that students think of their own experiences and preconceptions as being things that can be close read and interrogated seems to make them more willing to look at close reading as being something that can apply to different kinds of texts besides poems. I mean, you know, there's in the very beginning, I have them look at ads and close read them, but then they start to imagine experiences as being things that can be close read. And it's been amazing to me how much that has allowed them, or that seems to me so far to be the best way of getting them to think about intersectionality. It's something we talk about, but when they start to write about it, they think, well, I'm this thing, but I'm also this thing, and they're related. And that has seemed to work better than anything else I've been able to do in terms of explaining this as intersectionality. So, one thing I think that's also sort of interesting about personal writing is the piece it occupies in the classroom and sort of gets, you know, I think it's a touchy-feely or soft. It's like soft analysis. And I think that can be true, partly because evaluating can be so difficult. We just want to say, that's great, thank you, and move on. But I think it also, I mean, by nature, I'm kind of a cozy teacher. I kind of be like, this is awesome, guys, this is fun. But I think it can also be really difficult in a productive way because it's not, you know, trying to sort of move past explaining this is what I think and then maybe critically engaging with that. You know, this is maybe why I think the things I think. This is why what I think influences how I think about something else. So I think that can actually be really hard and maybe harder than just trying to detach yourself from what it is that you're reading or talking about. And I think that difficulty can actually be really motivational to students. We were talking earlier about how we don't really like giving grades and how can we motivate students other ways. They seem to really like it. So they talk about how it makes the class relevant to them. And I would argue that it was always relevant to them, but it somehow makes that relevance a lot clearer. So I think that's a useful thing. And then I guess the last thing, sort of generally speaking about personal writing, I wanted to say is a little bit about the ethics of it. Because I think it's something that gets valued as a way to give students a voice, but I think it can also make them vulnerable in ways that can be problematic. Because it's important that the teacher acknowledge that they are as embodied in the position as the students. So sometimes I'll hear things I don't want to hear. And then because of the way the classroom is organized, I'm still in the position where I give a grade. And so it seems really important when we talk about personal writing to talk about the obligation that maybe an instructor has to be objective or to be honest about their ability to be objective. And also to sort of engage in, you know, the personal as being a reciprocal process. So I need to be willing, or I think I need to be willing to put myself out there in the ways I ask my students to put themselves out there. Because otherwise it seems like it doesn't work. It seems like that's just me sort of imposing on them. The specific assignment that I do then, through which I've been trying to work through some of those issues, has to do with Real Talk Friday. We were in the midst of a particularly difficult theoretical play, and the students, I think, they felt very distant from it. And so it was a Friday, and I think we were all tired, so I said, okay, let's have Real Talk. And so we sat in a circle, and we actually, in that class, dissected the Vandy Girl, and it started out feeling a lot like gossip to me, you know, to what Vandy Girls do, but ultimately, I think it helped us get at issues of citationality and performativity, and they wound up sort of speaking to these things that are really difficult. You know, like they were kind of reconstructing the Judith Butler chapter without even knowing it. And so that was really productive, and that became something I started to do in my classes more. And then specifically in terms of writing, I had them do something called Real Talk to Go, and the first draft of it was an essay in which they had to recount a notable time in which they found themselves being raced, classed, gendered, or some combination thereof. And I was really kind of apprehensive about it. I didn't know what I was going to get. They came back with these really, really interesting and thought-provoking essays that were also, as pieces of writing, really problematic. Absent almost all stylistic conventions. So one thing that I guess I've been trying to take them through is how can we revise it? How can I make it into an essay? Because I teach a writing intensive class, and I teach a class that's about form, that's about literary analysis, and so it seems to me that I need to be sort of incorporating that into it. And so they started out by editing for grammar and style, and now they are reading personal essays and starting to think about these stylistic conventions, because I want them to think about the relationship between experience and narrative, and the relationship between narrative and theme. And to be able to recognize that in other literature, I want them to sort of recognize how that can apply to their own experiences and their own stories. They can mobilize what they have felt and experienced for these kinds of literary aims. And so I'm still kind of working with it. We're still going through revision processes, and one question I have is for what to do with them when they're done, or if they're ever done, how to have them share them, how to grade them. Those are still questions I'm kind of working through, but that's the project that I'm working.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank through their few people, but I'm often standing in front of the classroom holding the writing textbook and saying to them, this is a guide to life. Being a better close reader will make you a better person. I feel really passionately that being a close reader does make you a better person in these ways that it can kind of intersect with close reading things that aren't texts, or just becoming a better thinker, more critical analyzer of the world that's around me. So a little bit of background about my class, which you got the title of, which is a 100 level class, English 100, it's composition. So it's not the same class that Jane is teaching. She's got an added sort of objective of teaching them literature, which I don't have in this class. So my theme was, where am I? Putting the I in identity and ideology, and thinking about how who we are and where we stand as a community, or as an individual and community, and then as a community shaping individuals, how we negotiate that kind of position in lots of different ways. And the text I used was writing analytically with reading, so it's really easy to have all right there that sort of wrote that and sort of hand picked them from across the essays that are included in that book. So it's designed by Vanderbilt to give students an introduction to writing for those of you who don't know. And we get to choose, all of us, to choose our own topics, texts, and we make our own syllabi. In this particular class, I designed it to make critical thinking and analysis at the heart of the course. And my idea was to create a kind of course that made students interrogate their own experiences. And the way we've done it is I've sort of broken it into two main heuristics that I use in class, and it's ways of argumentation. And literally there are simply these two that I always come back to. And the first one is a kind of a statement. It seems to be about X, but it's really about Y. So to try and help them get at the implicit meanings behind either an ad that they're looking at, the essay that we're reading, the television show that we've been watching, whatever it is. And then the second one is a lens. So putting on, and I literally use the metaphor, a camera lens or a microscope lens, putting on a different lens to look at the text in a different way. So we read essays that do this, and then we also write our own arguments using these two models. There are lots and lots more, but these seem to be the two that are easiest to grasp. And they're still, this far into the semester, hard for them to do. So I feel like we're still working in, and that's a good thing. So a little bit more about seems to be about X, but it's really about Y. Is a kind of way for them to flex their close reading skills, even though since it's not a literature class, we don't talk a lot about what close reading is and what it means. But an example would be, we talked in like one day in class that the television show Weeds seems to be about drug trade and race relations, but is really about a kind of exposing the bourgeois life in suburbs. Or you can do it in many different ways. Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window seems to be a murder mystery, but it's really a marriage plot between the two main characters. So you can see how that works. And then for an example of what a lens would do, I asked them to say, look at Weeds with the lens of race, with the lens of sexuality, sex and gender, class. And so they come up with different kinds of analysis for this. So all fairly basic, but in a 100 level class, which should be their first introduction to college level reading and writing, it seems to work really well. So I brought these two assignments with me that almost bookend my semester. And I've used them to some extent in the 102 class, but they seem to be working even better, yay, in a 100 level class. The first is a kind of jigsaw exercise that I used really, really early in the semester, and that's the definitions. So what I do is I break the class up, and each person gets one assignment. So there are 9 students in my class this time, and so there were 3 groups of 3. And each of them has the burden of coming back and teaching their little group about their assignment. And So we begin by simply learning the definitions of ideology, epistemology, and then narrative capability, which is really what I want to teach them, but I can't since it's a not a literature course, so we just talk about it at length. If you don't know what negative capability is, it's the kind of idea that Keats puts forth of being okay with uncertainty, that you can be in this kind of moment of uncertainty and not have to have a kind of solution or one answer. And when the students come back and give them Keats's letter to look at and teach one another, the kind of portion where this begins to move into like personal writing and continue throughout the semester, they have to come back not just with a kind of dictionary definition, but with examples of what they think an ideology might be, or what an example of an epistemology might be, or epistemological principle is what I have written down. And then try and share it with the class. So I don't intervene in these little groups at all. And it's really interesting to see them sort of working with one another, trying to teach each other what ideology is, and then have them have the beginnings of little lights growing up, like, oh, so an ideology, my religion is this ideology that constructs how I see the world. And then they start to think, oh, well, is this kind of like a lens that we have been thinking about when we've been talking about argumentation? And because they come sort of with the burden of teaching their classmates, I think it works really well to sort of empower them to make the connections to their own lives, to start thinking about what these different ideologies are, different ways of knowing are in their own examples. So this comes, again, very early in the class. And then we'll put everything that the groups have on the board and use it as a class discussion. So much, much later in the semester, I have them do a reading response portfolio, which is what's on the flip side of your handout. And the reading response portfolio comes out of a job as Jane at putting my assignments in a kind of critical inquiry. But it comes out of the idea of asking students to look at their writing across the semester in a portfolio in hopes that they'll begin to see their own kind of progression of thought and experience throughout the class. And each week they have to do a two-page reading response. And the assignments vary, but for the most part they're analyze the argument and then push it one step further. Either ask an additional question about something that the article misses, or add your own experience. It can be anything that answers your kind of so what question. So they collect all of these, and then the reflection that they do for the reading response portfolio is really the most personal piece of writing that they have to do in their class. The idea is that I want them to think back over through the semester and interrogate a moment where they feel like their ideology or epistemology has been challenged or changed, or even just a moment where they recognize they were part of one of these invisible networks, the frameworks of knowing, is what I continue to repeat to them. And you can see some of their questions. It's only a 2 to 3 page response, so of course I ask them to focus on something specific, but how has your understanding of these concepts changed the way you think about Vanderbilt? I often get assignments that think about the Van Girl, which I think is really interesting. An experience you've had this semester that's made them connect with either another class or with some experience outside of our class. And then how has your understanding of reading text changed? And we've been thinking about texts as TV shows, songs, advertisements, so the broad range of things there. And the one I like the most that no one ever writes about is how has this class made you think differently about the experience of learning? So one day, I hope, that someone will think so full of function on their experience of learning. But not yet. But we talk about it in class all the time. And these are moments where, in these reading response portfolios, I tend to get things that connect the classes across the university. So the ways that we thought about what ideology is really made me better understand the way my sociology class is presenting these kinds of understandings of other cultures. this happened to me last night when I remained in the dorm. I still think that it's a kind of a personal integration where they're starting to make connections that what we do in the classroom doesn't have to stay in the classroom, but can start to bridge and to multiply and spill over into lots of other areas of their lives.
Well, I've just made a few notes here, and I'm going to talk about a couple of sort of non-traditional writing assignments that I have been experimenting with over the last few semesters. The composition courses that I've been teaching. So in the fall, I taught English 100, which is just a straight composition course, and this semester I'm teaching English 120, which is an intermediate composition. And one of the things that's been nice about teaching courses in the composition series is that as instructors, it frees us from certain disciplinary constraints. And so rather than the purpose of the course being to teach three different genres and to focus on literary analysis as the mode of writing, what we do is encourage the students to write in as many different modes as possible and really focus on writing rather than content. And so that framework freed me up to start thinking about more creative types of writing assignments that I might assign. And I found it really useful to assign creative pieces at the beginning of the semester and then move from there to more analytical pieces, more sort of traditional format for writing. Join the circle. So I'll just offer some reflections on maybe what I see as the value of these kinds of creative assignments and what I see as some of the difficulties that go along with assigning traditional writing assignments. And then I'll show you guys a couple of examples of assignments that I've worked with and some samples of student writing that I got in response to these assignments. So first of all, when Nicole asked me if I had any interest in joining this roundtable discussion, I hesitated because while I have been experimenting with these non-traditional assignments, I didn't necessarily think of them as personal writing assignments. It seemed to me that they were more like creative writing assignments that were then sometimes coincidentally also personal assignments. So some students would write memoirs, but other students would write fiction or creative nonfiction that was maybe less personal, explicit and personal. But as I started thinking about that, what I realized is that creative writing is often inherently more personal than literary analysis is as a mode of writing. And so even if students weren't necessarily talking about their own lives, they were invested in the assignment in a way that they weren't necessarily invested in the traditional literary analysis. And I think that's because it requires students to make creative decisions, and because the possibilities for the shape that their essay will ultimately take are so much more open that they have a greater personal investment in the specific decisions that they make. So it matters to them what kinds of stylistic choices that they're making, for example. And I think that maybe on the other side of things, one of the downsides of traditional thesis-driven papers is that students often think of them as formulaic or mechanical, and so they're less personal interested, and they become less personal when the student even if that's a kind of misconception about how that type of writing has to be considered. So let's see. What do I find valuable about incorporating these kinds of creative writing or personal writing assignments in the classroom? It seems to me that I was thinking here about writing and discipline, and discipline seems to come up in two ways here. So it comes up both as a kind of justification early on. So what I'm trying to get them to do is maybe break free from a sort of disciplinary constraint of writing literary analysis, doing close readings and doing literary analysis. analysis. So maybe it's less, maybe I'm trying to remove some of the discipline of that kind of assignment. And that seems valuable because it forces this emphasis on style. And then what's nice about incorporating these more traditional assignments later on in the semester is that students have sort of loosened themselves up from the formula or from the mechanical view of writing and started thinking about style. And so when they come back to the literary analysis papers, they're more concerned with aspects or issues of style and those kinds of things. And then discipline also comes up, so not just as a justification for this kind of assignment, but also as a problem for this kind of assignment. So how are you to grade an assignment that is so open-ended and that allows students so much sort of creative freedom and artistic freedom in the format that they choose for? And for me, how I grade these assignments, it often has to do, instead of with content, it has to do with process. So I emphasize process in these writing assignments, and often we'll have several stages of in-class writing assignments where students will begin the paper in class and maybe even define their own student-directed revision objectives. So they'll brainstorm in one writing assignment and then they'll come up with some objectives for the next, how they want the assignment to progress from there, or how they want the paper to progress from there. And I just constantly try to force them to think critically about their own writing, develop these objectives, and then see whether or not they meet those objectives. So in the end, when I end up grading them, I grade them in large part on the types of revisions and the substantiveness of those revisions that they've done over time. And I let their own objectives shape how exactly it is that they're going to revise. And then beyond that, I also ask them to reflect at each stage. So not only in coming up with these objectives, but then with the final draft that they turn in, I ask them to reflect on what they think that they did well, what they were trying to achieve that they had a hard time achieving. So I let them do a sort of first round of critique before I go to it. And then at that point, I mean, it's usually, I don't know, they often get good grades because they have been revising along the way. But if they're not going to get a good grade, it's pretty clear why. So either they haven't done substantive revisions, or there are grammatical issues that are plaguing the paper that make them feel okay grading down. And so I don't have to worry about making them feel bad so much. Or really, I don't have to engage in this question. I try to take myself out of that sort of problematic situation of deciding how to grade the specific stylistic choices that they made. I just want them to be making them conscious. So maybe we can take a look at a couple of assignments that I've given out. And if you flip to the next page in the handout, you'll see my walking essay assignment. And so this was for a composition course. The theme of it was writing about place. And so their first assignment, as you can see, was to go for a walk and write about that walk and then turn that writing into a kind of creative nonfiction piece. So I asked them to journal. I'll let you just go ahead and read through this assignment. So I might not have time to go through all the handouts. So my objectives for this assignment, there were really two of them. two sort of formal objectives. One was to get them to focus on detail, and the importance of detail, and the other was to get them to start thinking about how to turn detail into figurative language, so how to turn details into metaphors and stuff like that. And in terms of the actual formal construction of this kind of essay, one of the things that we talked about was that maybe the idea of walking could serve as a model for the format. So while you're wandering around physically, the essay itself will sort of take a wandering and meandering form. So you can touch on lots of different topics, but those topics, what I guess holds them together is that they have some relationship to the physical journey that you describe. So your mental journey has some sort of formal connection to the physical journey. That was a pretty loose kind of like way of talking about form, but hopefully it was freeing for them in some way. It's less disappointing. And what worked well about this essay, it turned out that I had four international students, or a class of eight students, and all of them had just arrived in the United States for the first time that fall. So this was nice for them just to, you know, learn a little bit about the panel. And they were able to reflect in really interesting ways on the differences between the environment that they were encountering here and the types of people and things that they were seeing here in Nashville, and the things that they remembered from home. So place for them at this moment in their lives just happened to be a particularly important way that they worked well. Maybe that's just a bit of a creative circle. Which is intermediate composition, and the new scheme for the class is global citizenship, constructing global citizenship. And I've divided the class into critical visions and reconstructive visions. So in the first half of the semester, we're looking at various texts that are critical in some way of aspects of the economy, global economy, or as you can see here, the topics were economy and military. So we had watched The Corporation, we had watched the documentary Why We Fight, and we had read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And what I asked them to do was not write a literary analysis, but instead to use those texts as a kind of model for their own paper, and to do a more creative critical intervention. So they were supposed to address the same topics, but to use maybe some of the same literary devices or formal techniques that these other texts were using. And so they could write a memoir, then I gave the suggestion of Confessions of a Nashville Grocery Shopper, or they could conduct their own series of interviews about the American military and American foreign policy around the question of why do you fight. So they could use the same question as the film needs, for example. And pretty open assignment, I guess, in terms of what it was that they could do. And maybe I'll just point you, we can just flip through what's left here, and I'll show you the kinds of responses that I got, which I thought were really pretty amazing. So the first one.
I love this song.
Seven Nation Army. Yeah, so this first response, and I'm just taking excerpts here from some of the better papers, but this one is an ROTC student who decided that she was going to keep a journal for a week of her ROTC training and reflect on some of the themes of the course. We go back and forth between thinking about her ROTC training and the themes of the course, and that came out in a really great and interesting way. Second essay here, Conscience of a Branded Consumer, is a kind of memoir by a student in my class who also happens to be a student athlete here at Vanderbilt. And so it was, I think, interesting for him to reflect as he went through thinking about when in his life he became branded. Some of the interesting things that come up here, you'll see that he realized he became branded in middle school. When he hit puberty and began to care what girls thought about him. And at that point, he started caring what kind of clothes he wore. And that seemed like a pretty interesting insight to me. And it goes on to talk about his experience at a private school in Atlanta and being from a different socioeconomic background than most of the students there, how that affected his relationship to brands. And then he goes all the way into Vanderbilt, thinking about how he's actually acting oftentimes as a kind of billboard for different companies that sponsor the university's athletic program. So this turned out to be a really interesting essay as well. The next one in there is a fictional story about the setting is in Washington, D.C., and there's two characters, Michael, who is a professor. It's a conference on education. Both of the characters are professors. Michael is a professor from the United States. Hakeem is a professor from Iraq, and they have a discussion about why the Iraq war was begun. And I think that the dialogue there, I mean, her use of point of view was really interesting. So what she's able to do is she sort of creates a stereotypically naive perspective for the American professor, but it ends up becoming more complex as she works her way through the dialogue. So in working it out and trying to make that character believable, one of the things that the student realized was that she had to make his perspective less naive. In the end, and I think that she did a good job with that. That having to think from those multiple points of view was an interesting assignment here. Next essay came out really well. So this was a student who conducted a series of 10 interviews with people. You can see in the second paragraph, people ages 19 to 23 and three adults above the age of 50 from different political and ethnic backgrounds. She asked them a bunch of questions relating to the superiority of the economic system of the United States, its ideal role in a globalized world, and impact of transnational corporations abroad. You can see one of the questions here. She analyzes the answers that she got from all of these people and tries to make connections about those different answers. Maybe a second to last paragraph is interesting. She says, Most interesting that my interviews held two conflicting connotations in regard to the idea of profit. Some individuals associated with an award view it as a positive component. On the contrary, others view it as a greedy desire or phenomenon that undermines all aspects of society. These conflicting connotations of profit. So she realizes that there's this interesting tension here in the idea of profit. And her analysis was really interesting. One of the things that she realizes along the way is that U.S. citizens are often portrayed as ignorant, and that didn't turn out to be the case in her interview. She found that people were much better informed, that their way of relating to these issues was much more complex than it often is portrayed in the media, or than she would have assumed that it would be complex too. And then the final piece in here is a kind of satirical dystopia. The main character is a consultant or a representative for a consulting group that works with corporations and he defends corporations. But he what's satirical about it is that he kind of like naively believes that he's doing something good in the face of a lot of the evidence in the setting is that what is happening is in fact not good. And so he goes on believing that he's doing a good thing, and becomes funny and sort of absurd. So, anyway, lots of great responses. And so I'll just end by saying that while I didn't tend to do these more creative assignments in my one or two courses, I think that the success that I've had with them in these 100 courses argues for incorporating them into a classroom and maybe more sort of traditional expectations for how.
So I'm briefly going to talk about journals in women's studies classroom, which is kind of a specific thing, but I think it's some of the things that I'm going to be talking about, I think, are applicable to other sorts of disciplines and other sorts of assignments. Just a little background, I am from the English department, as I mentioned. I'm teaching in women's and gender studies for the first time this semester, and so that was generally terrifying to me, specifically around personal writing, because I felt like there were very specific reasons why course of writing needed to be a bigger component of my course than previously. And you know, I wanted to be true to these traditional kind of principles of learning studies in terms of learning across differences, valuing diverse voices, upholding the emotional as an important part of knowledge, so not just valuing rational knowledge and all that kind of stuff. So I knew that the personal writing needed to be part of the classroom. I didn't quite know how I was going to do that, and I'm also not a touchy-feely person. I'm not a touchy-feely kind of teacher. So it makes me nervous to have students talk about themselves, they don't know what to do with it. And I also have had just my own experience being in undergrad in gender studies courses. I feel like personal reflection, personal writing has been either structured badly by the instructors or done badly. But I think there's ways in which we can bring in personal writing in a non-reflective manner. It's just, I'm talking to them as I'll talk. We're talking just so you know that I've done cool things in my life or whatever. So I wanted to avoid that kind of stuff, but also, that just talking about my experience would be part of it. So I like the idea of journals, but I didn't want them to be these journals where people wrote, I feel this, and therefore that's all I have to say. So how to get students to think critically about their feelings and about their experience and things like that. And I think something worth saying is we've all been in those classes regardless of discipline where someone has said, well, my dad told me this. Okay, where do we go next with that comment? Or, well, I've never had that experience. Okay, great. So how can we get students to go a little further with those kinds of statements and kind of interrogate themselves and interrogate how their use of personal experience is affecting others? So not just, what are the ramifications of that thing that happened to me, but what are the ramifications of me sharing that thing that happened to me in the classroom? How is it impacting other people? So I guess a couple of things to mention is my personal criteria for how personal reflection can be done well. You guys might have things to add later on. So as I mentioned, critical thinking as actually being part of emotional experience, so not thinking of the critical and emotional as being opposites, I guess. Being willing to problematize personal experience as evidence, which doesn't mean dismissing it, right? So it doesn't mean saying to that person, well, that doesn't count as evidence because it was your individual experience, but just thinking more about when does that count as evidence, how could that count as evidence? And I guess I was kind of mentioning this already, but taking seriously the responsibility that comes with personal sharing. So we have to be responsible to those that share, but also be responsible in our own sharing. And some of these ideas actually are in one of the handouts that I have for you guys. This is kind of an old book. It's actually almost 20 years old now. Diana Fess is Essentially Speaking, but I think it's still totally relevant. She has a fabulous chapter called Essentialism in the Classroom about those moments when people, when students say, as a woman, I think this, right? So how do we problematize those moments? How do we get them to say more? How do we get students to respond to that? And I actually taught this in my women's and gender studies class because it's very short, about 8 pages or something. So we didn't have a deep discussion or a lengthy discussion about this chapter, but I think it was helpful to them in terms of understanding my goals for the course. So certainly personal experience was acceptable, having those strategic essentialism moments where we say, I want to speak as a woman, I want to speak as a person of color, but how can we do it in a thoughtful and respectful kind of way? So that's something that might be useful to some of you. Okay, so I guess what I can also show you guys is a syllabus where I kind of lay out how personal experience is going to work in the classroom. So I just have the first 2 pages actually for the syllabus. So under course description, I mentioned that we're both doing theories of sex and gender and experiential accounts of sex and gender. And some of those might have some kind of overlap, and we're actually going to problematize that overlap between theory and experience. And so what students have to do at the very beginning of the course is identify 2 contexts in which they operate as a race, gendered, or class. I just say sex and gender human being. And then we do talk about race and class. And so one of the contexts must be related to Vanderbilt, so I'll give them examples. you know, your work study job, how do you operate as a sexed or gendered community in your job? How does that work in your fraternity? And then they can pick one that's outside of your campus, your family, your church, your relationship with your best friend, whatever. And then, so flipping over to journals, which is on the second page. This is, I think, 20% of their grade is journals. They have to do 9 over the course of the semester, and they're not graded individually. So getting back to that question of how do we assess personal writing, they're not assessed in terms of quality or anything like that, but they do have certain parameters they have to meet, which I'll explain in a moment. But it's pretty much an all or nothing thing. You gotta do all 9 of them or you don't get the grade. And sharing is also part of that as well. So I tell them they can journal as much or as little as they want, but they have to do 2 things. One is comment on one of the readings, so if you read 3 pieces, 4 pieces for the week, they can just make 1, and comment on one of their contexts. So something like, this piece spoke to me in terms of you know, how I operate in my job as a sex person or as a gender person. And then the second thing, which is kind of tricky, but I think they've been doing this really well, is to consider what Tony King identifies as the 3 general levels for which there could be an issue. And so one of these is, she calls them intrapsychic. The next one is specific situational variables. And the third is sociocultural. So again, taking that moment of, well, I had this happen to me, and sort of think about, is that a common thing to have happen, do you think? Do you think there are other people that have had that experience? How might someone of a different class have experienced that same thing similarly or differently, so sort of like getting them to sort of spin out a little further with that. And then I explain, because I think that those terms aren't necessarily useful for them, so I give them an example of what that might entail, so you guys can think about it later on. So what I do is every Friday when they bring in their journal, they have to talk for 5 minutes with someone that they've not talked to before. We have 20 students in the course, and so I don't think we've read that yet. So they just talk, you know, however much they want to say, however little they want to say. Just, you know, I'm sure that the conversation spins out into other things beyond their journal, so I think that's fine. And sometimes I give them a specific objective, right? So when you're done talking, be willing to share one thing that your partner said that you thought was interesting, but with their permission. So decide at the end one thing that you thought was cool, make sure it's okay to share it, and then share it. Or something like, tell us one way in which you and your partner disagreed or had a different view. Okay. And so I'm playing around with different ways to do that. I'm not sure if doing directed sharing like that is better than sort of being like, hey, let's all sit around in our little circle and talk about this. And so still working on that. Let's see. And something that we've been talking about as a group is different ways to do journals, generally speaking. So an idea might be anonymously, just have them come in with their journal entry, ask me Times New Roman, so no one, you know, not handwritten or anything like that, they could identify them and, you know, don't put a name on it, just sort of throw the papers up in the air and you have to grab one and read it and talk about what that person said. So I'd be interested if you guys have ideas of better ways to do journals, different ways to do journals, ways to make sharing less scary. And one thing I should also say is that they're not required to turn the journal into me, so they know ahead of time if they're going to write out something super personal, they don't have to show me. Or they have the option of not sharing it with their partner, and I'm not sure exactly how I see this working because no one's done it yet, but maybe giving them the option of just, you know, making it a fake sort of thing, you know, say, oh, well, I wrote about such and such, and, you know, that was my entry, even if it wasn't. So I don't really know how to handle that kind of stuff in terms of sharing, so. Anyway, that's pretty much it. And as I mentioned before, we are open to questions. We also maybe have some questions for you guys in terms of suggestions or how you would do something differently. So we'll start out with you. Does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. Do you ever thought about using post-its?
Yeah, I think Blackboard allows anonymous. Yeah. I'm sort of old-fashioned just in terms of I like to write on their entries, which is another worth mentioning, is that I always respond back to them just sort of, you know, I'm not just like, check, that's cool, whatever, I don't care what you said. But yeah, I think that's the way in which it all is supposed to be really cool.
Yes. So I'm teaching foreign languages, so this is all extremely interesting for me because I always have to operate on two levels. My student can think in my language, like in German, so they are very inclined to do formal language thinking with like basic writing. So there's always this subtle level, and especially your ideas might be really useful for teaching the German composition class, so thanks a lot. I would like try to integrate that because I make my students write personal stuff, but this is just how you start teaching. I made really good experiences this semester with setting up as the environment where you share personal writing, which I try to use. So what I have to do is I try to make my students write for other people and not for me, because they will write and talk German, not for me. So it doesn't help them if I understand that. So I try to make them write about personal stuff, but also write more like Sachtext to them. Text about things. In the wiki. And I found that the longer they do that, the better they get A, in expressing themselves, but also B, in like making good, concise points, which I find interesting. And what happens is, now that they get used to writing personal comments, say, so I screened a movie, a German anti-capitalist movie, where like Hughes kind of like engages in quasi-terroristic acts against rich people, which you can imagine is like a hot topic in the medical classroom. And it was really interesting to see that they, A, felt comfortable expressing personal opinions and feelings and experiences in the wiki, but then they also came back in the classroom discussions on what other people wrote. So I don't know if this is about the wiki, but it never worked with Blackboard when I tried anything like that.
And so it's they kind have of like a co-index.
You can choose whatever you want to do, but the wiki kind of is like a second environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever worked with it. So you basically, Wikipedia is a wiki. So you know what it is? So the idea that students can like add new web pages, and that they can repeat what they wrote, and that they can comment on each other's writings, and like remove their mistakes, and like say, well, this is an awesome thing that you wrote. But they do that kind of like in a second written classroom, which seems to foster each other's engagement.
Actually, I had a really specific question for John about the walking assignment. You're going to need to teach walking, so I've been thinking about how I was going to do that. When you talked about turning experiences into metaphors, could you say a little bit more about what you meant by that and how you get students to do that?
I think, so what is it? Turning details into metaphors. So, I have a couple of thoughts on that. One is that the journal assignments that I was giving were helpful here, and this sort of gets at one of the things that we talked about as a group yesterday, which is about like how to assign creative journal assignments. But I had them alternating journal assignments between descriptive entries and contemplative entries. So the descriptive entries were meant to be just descriptive. They had to go outside and observe and write down as much as they could about what they were watching. And then the contemplative entries started with a quote from Thoreau or from whoever we had been reading, and they then thought more philosophically about that quote. And then we talked about metaphor in class and how maybe metaphor is about like tying an abstract concept to a concrete detail to an extent. And so then the suggestion is to look in the observational stuff that they've done for the kinds of details that might relate to the more abstract thoughts that they've been having, and to try and purposefully put the two together. So, yeah.
Form of personal responsibility. Is it different in journals, or in your class, where they have to be some kind of journals? It seems to be cool
too weird or too personal to share with the board, we just didn't dream to just make something up because it came from the same corner of our brains. It really made us loosen up with that. So it's no pressure. I don't have to write that if I don't want to. And if for some reason nothing happens this week, I can just put something down. So I don't know, that really loosened us up.
Maybe just to build on that, I have one of the things about my personal writing assignments is that I've told them to like, fictionalize the personal, so that maybe it's not as tied to their actual experience as it is tied to what it is that they're trying to say, right? So like, so with the girl who's ruined up her ROTC experiences. At some point, she dies during her training. I don't know if that happened. I kind of imagined that it didn't, but it was a really effective part of the assignment, or part of the essay.
I took a class in college called the Literary Blog, and it was just sort of like a topics class, basically. So it wasn't quite like 102 in the sense that you're really getting people to work on improving your writing, but the way that the professor used journals was very interesting. It was kind of turned into basically a documentary of a class. In the end, I mean, you submitted papers as papers, but you also needed to release them into your journal, or occasionally I would get really zealous and handwrite them into my journal because my journal started to develop this aesthetic as I was going along. I put in, and a lot of other students did too, articles that they found and reading that related to what we were doing. Just kind of turned it, this is more of a scrapbook really than anything else. He encouraged people when we would go on field trips to blogs to take pictures or to draw. And it just became this kind of amazing circle of texts and images and thoughts, all of which were supplementary to what we were talking about in class, but very much revolved around it. It was very cool.
Interdisciplinary, it seems like Sarah was talking about that being a really valuable part of incorporating personal learning. So if you can have a journal that kind of emphasizes that, that it's a good place for you to take the specific and make it interdisciplinary, it seems to be useful because that can be sort of tailored to where the student's coming from in relation to the class that they're in.
I like the idea that I use this sort of wiki blogging. I like that idea. It seems to bridge the gap between the writing course that you guys are talking about, and I'm wondering how much of that money happens to how you teach a literature course. You're being responsible for the literature. If you create that sort of supplemental space, like a blog or a wiki with its own sort of external rules that can be manipulated and don't have to sort of correspond entirely to the rules of the class, and create that sort of enabling environment, I find that incredibly productive. And you don't have to grade it so much. You can let people respond to whatever you're reading and let the students respond to other students on that list. And all you have to do is require them to speak to each other, to say to post and post in response to somebody else's post. So this creates this whole other space. And I think that's a good way. I agree with that. That's a really good way to sort of supplement the class, which maybe isn't so directly structured around writing, but it maybe gets much of a more sort of literary structure.
Well, the wiki as opposed to the Blackboard feels like a blog, and they, you know, students have like their My Open Diary or something, you know, or like live journal, you know, so it's like a blog is a place where people are increasingly, I think, comfortable talking about the personal in ways that seem almost shocking, and so as opposed to something that feels really academic, it seems to me that could be a powerful possibility with blogs and wikis.
TAs and my department have experimented with blogs, especially. And it seems that some of them have experimented with blog journals. And the idea was that students should just like reflect on their week in German, and the assignment was just writing one assignment a week, and that was all there. Students hated it, and one problem, because the assignment was too open, and one problem that comes up with blogs is that each student has her own blog. And then you like have to like bookmark all of them if you want to like tell students to read other people's blog, and it's always like the 2 seconds you think you don't have. So they only read and commented on each other's writing when it was an assignment with a grade.
comment or two other people's writing, then they did it. But the wiki for me works better, just because you're in it already and you can just like browse through what the other people have done. But that also is a way in which I misuse or I just block.
Yes, we're right.